Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And I'm Carol the Coach, and welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show. This is the show about sexual addiction, and I am just so happy and grateful to be able to help you with this issue. You know, I get emails and calls from people all over the world, and they share that they have a sexual addiction, or they share that, you know what ends up happening, they love somebody who has a sexual addiction. So I am incredibly blessed to be able to bring you the experts in the field. And they are people that will tell you about the best treatment centers in the country, in the world. They're people that will talk about their books that have been so helpful in allowing others to know what is sexual addiction all about. You know, whether you're a partner or you believe you're a sexual addict, you want the information to help you to make the right decision. So, again, this is a show that will help to educate you and inform you and take you to that next level so that you can get the help that you need, whether you be a partner or a sex addict. And tonight, I am very excited to have someone who has written about sexual addiction and the financial issues that go along with it. We're going to be interviewing Deborah L. Kaplan, who wrote For Love and Money, Exploring Sexual and Financial Exploitation in Relationships. And come on, in any couple's relationship, next to division of duties, money is the second biggest issue in a relationship. So you can imagine that if somebody's had a sexual addiction, they have money issues. How do we know that? Because although sexual addiction can be anonymous, affordable, and accessible, it progresses to the point where it ends up costing you money. You know, I met with a man the other day, and when he came in, he said, I found a group of people that would allow me to download pornography, pornographic movies, pornographic film, and normally, I would have paid an exorbitant amount, but this group allowed me to download for free. So, of course, I took advantage of it. Well, what ended up happening was about 6 months into the process, after he had a full library of downloaded videos and films and pictures, he was contacted by the police department saying that if he did not pay $10,000 they were going to exploit him and send to everybody in his email address book the issues that he had and what he had been doing. Now, he was smart enough to know this was not the police department contacting him, but they obviously were either part of the scam that got him to download the videos to begin with, or they had hacked in to that group, and they were now exploiting him by saying, you give us $10,000, or we're going to exploit you. We are going to let everybody know what you've been doing. Well, this man is a good Christian. He has a family, and he could not take the risk of calling their bluff. And so he paid them the $10,000. Boy, there was somebody who thought he was getting a deal and found out, in essence, that his addiction was costing him, at a minimum, $10,000. So Deborah L. Kaplan is going to be talking about the volatile and exploitive world that occurs when addiction is fused with money, finance, and relationships. And, you know, I got to tell you, there are all sorts of ways that this addiction costs money, whether it be through prostitution or Craigslist. You know, I cannot count the number of men and women who have lost money because they had somebody over to their apartment, to their house, and they were ripped off. That person actually scammed them and took their money. I know I had a man who went to Las Vegas, and you, if any of you have ever been to Las Vegas, you know that there are cards that people hand out with different call girls on them. And it said $150 to spend time with this woman. Well, ultimately, this man, who had been 8 months recovered, caved to the impulses. And he contacted the service, who sent over a prostitute, who walked into his hotel room, and for $150, she actually said, sir, that was just for me to walk in your door. You want this, it's going to cost you this. You want that, it's going to cost you that. The man ended up spending $900 of money that he truly did not have. He was stretching his money to even get to the conference that he was going to in Las Vegas. So I guess my point to you is that so oftentimes this addiction costs money that you have not even begun to believe that you would ever spend money on. And again, for love and money, exploring sexual and financial exploitation in relationships, Deborah Kaplan is going to be talking about what is financial betrayal and, you know, what's the relationship between sexual and financial exploitation. So if you've got any money problems, if you spent way too much on sexual addiction, if you're in a coupleship, you've got this addiction on the side and you're having trouble with your monies. You know, one of the things that Patrick Carnes talks about is, he says, what are the financial costs of your addiction? Whether you're addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol, addicted to gambling, addicted to shopping, addicted to eating, addicted to sex, they all cost you money. So what are the financial costs behind this horrible illness? And so I'm excited to have her talk about that. Now, in the meantime, I got a really interesting email, and I asked him to call the show. And that number, if anybody does want to call, is 646-595-3284. Again, the number is 646-595-3284. Well, this email said, you know, Carol, I've listened to your full hour on iTunes, which I found very enlightening, and as you might guess, I identified myself with a lot of what you said. He had actually scored 14 out of 20 on the Do I Have a Sexual Addiction test, And if you want to take the test, you can go to www.sexhelp.com. But he actually said, you know, I've been looking for something more specialized. I've sought out and am seeing a marriage counselor for this addiction together with my wife. This sexual addiction of mine has ruined my marriage, well, almost ruined my marriage, and she is still undecided. He says, I love my wife to death. We have a wonderful life, family and friends, and two beautiful girls. I've not had sex with my wife for 5 years. Now, that's something that is very common in sexual addiction. When you've got somebody who has a sexual addiction, more than likely, the couple may end up being sexually anorexic. And what does that mean? That means because you have programmed your brain, you've trained your brain to get excited with one type or several types of sexual addiction behaviors, you can't have normal, healthy sex with women or with men that you love. And so, obviously, this man's saying, hey, I haven't had sex with my wife for 5 years. This is his second marriage. And between the first and second, I was obviously divorced and did a lot of internet sex with all the free time in the world. And this has actually retrained his brain and conditioned him to only get excited when it's a certain type of sex. So he said, I'm interested in talking about all this with someone that understands. Now, he's a man that says, I have very strong willpower and have stopped a good deal of my sexual activity I was doing. I changed my life, changed my work habits, and I've changed many things that contributed to the sexual addiction. You see, my wife caught me a couple of times already on the internet, and if you're listening to the show, this could be you. And he says, right now I've gone one whole month without doing it. I have a big sexual appetite, always have, so I admit I do masturbate to porn for about 15 minutes max every other day. I've not engaged in any of the sites I'm currently signed up onto, such as adultfriendfinder.com. What do I need to do next? Well, anybody who's listened to the show knows that I don't think a therapist is enough. I do believe you need a 12-step program. Now, not everybody does, but I'm here to tell you that most people do. And when I say a 12-step program, I'm referring to SA or SAA. I just don't think this is something that you can handle on your own. As a matter of fact, all the literature and all the training suggests you need a huge village to help you stay sober and recovered from sexual addiction. And so you need to have a recovery plan that emphasizes prayer and meditation and groups and a sponsor and a good trained certified sexual addictions therapist. Perhaps you need to go to some workshops. If it's something you absolutely can't control, you might need a treatment center. But I guess the important thing is you can't do it by yourself whether you're one who has a lot of willpower or not. You're not strong enough to combat the sexual addiction. So I'm glad he emailed me. He sounds like a wonderful guy. That's one of the things I know is if you have a sexual addiction or love somebody who does, it's not unusual for that person to be, you know, a pillar of the community, to be involved in church, to have great kids, to participate in outside activities, whether it be a man or a woman. You know, I was talking with a woman the other day, and she is unable to absolutely be clean. Her behavior has improved immensely, but she still from time to time has trysts. And what I've told her is, and her husband, we need to start using polygraph tests. Not to bust somebody, not to catch them in the act, but to help them to stay clean and recovered. Now, I've always said if I ever worked with couples and recommended a polygraph test, I want to get out of the field. But what I know to be true about sexual addiction is sometimes that's the accountability you absolutely need to stay clean and sober for the first 3 to 5 years in your recovery. If you're doing all the steps and then you have that accountability of knowing that there's going to be a polygraph test once or twice a year, it just assists you in making the right decisions. So stay tuned to more of Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Go to iTunes and download over 70 shows that we've taped in the last year and a half. And get excited that we're going to have people on the show that can really help you to understand this illness and help guide you into exactly what you need to live the life you deserve. So right now, we are going to be interviewing Deborah L. Kaplan, who again wrote For Love and Money, Exploring Sexual and Financial Exploitation in Relationships. They go hand in hand. So let's find out more about this. Deborah, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show.
Good evening, Carol, and pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
Well, thank you. And boy, you really have made it your mission to help people understand the relationship between sex and financial exploitation in relationships. So tell me a little bit about what your book is about and what made you write the book.
Well, they're interesting bedfellows, as I call them. Sex and money often go hand in hand. And the book for Love and Money explores the volatile and exploitive world when addiction is fused with money, finance, and relationships. And oftentimes, certainly when addiction, sex addiction is present, money is used as an overlay, as a form of betrayal. And as many surveys have shown, that sexual betrayal is very distressing and certainly can be very destructive of a relationship. But financial betrayal oftentimes ranks as higher and much more destructive and more frequently, and certainly can be the number one reason for which relationships struggle or dissolve.
Now, when you say dissolve, you're talking about divorce, that relationships oftentimes don't know what they can do to reunify and reconciliate and work out a program so there isn't this financial exploitation, correct?
Well, the first part of that, yes. The first part is that if there are marriages that do not work on these issues around money and financial betrayal or exploitation, then certainly they run a very high risk of not working through this in a healthy manner. Relationships that are committed, but certainly where there is not a marriage, money and sex can be just as destructive. So when, as therapists, we take into consideration the overlay of money and sexual betrayal, because it isn't just the sexual betrayal that needs to be addressed. It's also about power, and it's about money. Oftentimes in relationships, whether it's healthy, whether it's a dysfunctional, struggling relationship, the essence of power is present. It's just how it's negotiated. And so many couples may or may not negotiate disparities in money, disparities in sex, and there might be a propensity for exploitation when that is not addressed in the communication of the coupleship.
So give me an example, if you would, of a couple that you may have worked with somewhere in your past where they not only had sexual addiction, but they had financial exploitation.
Absolutely. Many more couples I could certainly speak to, and I want to preface this by saying that at no time tonight during our conversation or even in the book itself do I speak directly to any one person or any one situation. I'm going to speak to an amalgam of people and circumstances because I very strongly want to protect my clients and protect the anonymity of the people with whom I work. So in a particular fashion, you might have I'll just use this in very stereotypic fashion, a male who is struggling with sex addiction, and he may be acting out in sexual ways, but the wife, the partner, may not be aware of this. So in the use of and in the carrying out of the sexual exploitation, money is being spent perhaps on a prostitute, perhaps on a lover, perhaps in ways to garner sexual favor with somebody. At the same time, in order to satisfy a partner's needs for attention, money may be spent on items that a couple may, for example, this particular individual that I'm speaking about, this sex addict, in the service of keeping the home front happy and calm and copacetic, he may agree to expenditures by his wife, his partner, or his same-sex partner, in order to keep the home front calm while he's out. It helps deflect his sexual behavior and his compulsive acts.
So you're saying that on some level it's manipulative. It might be manipulative in that he feels guilty because he is making advances in some sort of sexual way, and so he goes above and beyond what he should to provide his partner with monies that will make her feel fulfilled and satisfied superficially.
Absolutely manipulative, yes.
And so
addicts, as we talk about, many addicts, certainly sex addicts who are in the throes of their addiction, will be manipulative and exploitive because it is the nature of the illness, self-absorbed and self-involved. But yes, in a manipulative way, to keep the wife deflected from what's going on, maybe in a bid to appease his own guilt about what he's doing, the use of money or in some way power and manipulation to help assuage his own guilt or to cover his acts that are exploitive sexually.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So, you know, oftentimes CSATs, and you're a CSAT, right, Deborah?
Yes, I'm a CSAT, and I'm also a CSAT supervisor, so I work with a lot of other therapists who bring these very same issues to the table because this is very common. You yourself, I'm sure, Carol, have seen this overlay of money and power negotiating the currencies, which we haven't spoken about, but negotiating different currencies within a relationship.
Well, and part of the work that we do with clients who believe that they have sexual addictions is to ask them to total up the financial cost of the sexual addiction. And I know that you just referenced two, one, the actual amount of money that might be spent on the addiction itself. Two, might be the money that is given to the spouse to help provide the love and care that he believes she deserves because he is acting out. It may be that there may be financial costs. I know I was talking with a man just this month who said, I lost my vice presidency at a major corporation because of my sexual addiction. And it took 6 years, but they eventually fired me because I was looking at porn, because I wasn't at the office. And although they didn't understand exactly what was going on with me, I knew that my sexual addiction had cost me my job, which was literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. So there's all sorts of ways that addiction can affect the average person who cannot control his or her behavior.
Yes, absolutely, Carol. When we take into consideration that an individual may be using money to enhance the addiction, be it to purchase drugs, be it to purchase alcohol, be it to act out with prostitutes or massage parlors. That's a literal accounting. That's a literal expenditure of how much money was used in the process of the addiction. But when we look at costs that are due to exploitation, when we look at monies that are being hidden, when we are looking at secret bank accounts, when we are looking at monies that are being taken and used in ways that were not with the consent of a partner, when we're looking at lost opportunity, those are not always literal costs or accounting of exploitation. It can be the deflection of where money is being used and in ways that a partner is not aware of. And so when, as you began to talk about, we ask our clients to do an accounting, we also have to look at lost opportunity. We also have to look at ways in which monies may not be available to a partner that would have been available, not because it's spent, but because it's hidden.
Oh, I absolutely understand. I had an auto mechanic at one point that said I pocketed at least 50% of the income I made. It never even made payroll so that I could pay for my prostitution. So obviously his wife never even knew that he made the amount of money that he made for a yearly gross. I mean, she was totally in the dark. She had no idea of anything she even missed because
correct.
He was pocketing the money to fulfill his sexual addiction fantasies. And so I'm assuming that these people come to you and either discover the amount of financial costs or they've come to you because you are the expert in how sexual and financial exploitation are integrated. So you decided to write this book, For Love and Money, and how would you break that book down? If my listeners want to get this book, what will they be getting?
So this book really breaks down and sets the groundwork from a biopsychosocial perspective. In other words, it looks at a number of psychological, biological, and physiological aspects. But we start with how we attach. How is it that we actually, I start with For Love and Money, about how we're drawn to different people and the ways in which our childhoods and how we attach predispose us to what becomes our attachment style. In the second part of the book, I continue to build on those foundational concepts, but I talk with colorful case commentary and stories from Wall Street about how money and rage and relationship factor into sex and power. The third part of the book speaks to the distinct practices and principles and tools that the readers and your listeners can use to employ in their relationships. So I provide ideas, tools, and exercises to elaborate on how someone can use what they're learning and put it into practice in their own relationships and marriages. It's not enough to understand these concepts. It's enough to now employ them, use them, and incorporate them. So going from a less healthy, less connected relationship to what they can do to understand themselves and now come to the table with their partner and say, hey, this is what I value in relationship, and this is what you value, but we haven't really been addressing this. We've been speaking around these concepts. And that speaks to the issue of relational currency. It's not just money tender. It's what I value and what I bring to the relationship and what my partner values and what he brings to the relationship. So in understanding that, I give my readers and listeners here tonight will gain an understanding and have exercises to use to get a better hold on what's important to them in their relationship.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about that. You see clients individually and as couples. Is that correct?
That's correct. I work with individuals and I work with couples, both around sex addiction as well as just couples that come to want to work on their relationship when there may not be necessarily addiction present, but there's an inability to really communicate effectively.
All right. And so what might be an exercise you would give somebody to help illustrate the issue or the work that they need to do?
Well, it depends on what their actual issues are that they're discussing. So let's look at a couple that may have, let's break this down very simplistically. A woman who comes together with her husband, she wants to stay home and be present for the children and raise the children, and she decides to leave work. And the husband stays, and he has chosen to be the breadwinner. Now, this is a very simplistic and a very simplified version of this. But is she aware of what the finances are? Is she aware of what monies are being spent, and not from a perspective of lack of trust, but does she know, is she aware of what the monies are and what is it that the family uses? In this case, I ask people to really sit down and have these conversations with their partners and look and see what is it that they would like to know. Many clients, I speak to many women who have said, you know, I'm okay with not knowing. I'd prefer not to know. And while there may not be a reason to be concerned, I certainly think information is powerful, and knowledge is information, and it's a way to gain a sense of where I am in this marriage. Without having that disparity and that lack of equality begins to grow. And so I ask the couple to sit down together and work on not only knowing what their budget is, but work on showing what they have as assets and where do they both feel compensated for their work in the house and in growing the family.
Okay, and so they might be sitting down and identifying where they feel like they should be compensated if it's monetary or if it is not.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at this from two perspectives. Let's look at it as emotional, sexual, and monetarily. Emotional compensation may be lacking on one end of the relationship. Perhaps the husband says, you know, I sit here and I work hard and I provide the money, but I don't feel like I'm being appreciated and loved for it. I feel as if I'm just providing a service. The wife, on the other hand, feels, I'm here, I raise the children, I'm doing everything we need, but I don't feel valued. I don't feel appreciated. And yet they're both speaking to the same thing, but they've never actually used those words. And to understand what they both value and what they both really need and want, it's important to be literal and intentional to discuss this.
And, you know, that may be the first time ever that they've been directed to be intentional. I mean, so oftentimes we learn about financial issues from our own parents, and let's face it, there's certain age groups where the men made all the decisions, or the woman's roles were not necessarily compensated for. So you're having them sit down and really take a good look at what they contribute to the family and what the compensation should be.
Correct. Now, there's a big piece here. If I were to say to this couple, and let's say I turn to the woman and say to her, what do you need in relationship? What are your needs and what are your wants? The needs and wants of a relationship sound very easy. They sound almost simplistic. And yet 90% of my clients have a hard time clarifying what their needs are. I need a home, I need to have an income, I need to know that the bills are paid for, I need to know that the children can get their school and they can get their clothes, I need to know that, you know, they'll be, that we'll have a roof over our head. But to really know, I need someone who's emotionally available there for me, or I need a man who's going to be responsive sexually to me. These needs may not have been discussed because they get lost in the day-to-day minutiae of either one, raising a family, or going about the business of just being in relationship. And sometimes it takes just having these conversations and being intentional about what are my needs and what are my wants.
And so are they oftentimes stymied as to what they feel they're worth or their duties are worth? I mean, I would think for some people this is a brand new concept.
For many people it's a foreign concept because they've never actually given themselves permission to ask themselves and say, what are my needs, and give themselves permission to have a need. Not only to have a need, but to express it. I may say I have a need, but I may not know what my needs are. Mm-hmm. I may end up saying, well, this is what I want, but that's different than what I need. A need is a bottom line, gotta have it, no ifs, ands, or buts. A want is,
okay,
it would sure be nice, but it's okay if I don't have this in relationship.
Okay.
Once I clarify what my needs and wants are, now I have to go about asking, is my partner able to give this to me? And therein lies an issue. He or she may not be getting what they need. And it's how to negotiate that. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean the relationship is doomed. It just means that this has to be discussed and grieved if in ways the need is not able to be given and satisfied by the partner.
And again, that is that can be so foreign for some people, and so you really give them guidelines to be able to talk about it. And
yes,
you know, even in the most progressive of relationships, it's amazing how some people will take a back seat and not want to talk about this. It's almost like, well, it seems status quo, so why rock the boat and get into an argument, as opposed to have a clear understanding about, you know, who contributes what and what is spent on what. So
absolutely. And especially if there has been addiction present in the history of the coupleship, one of the let's say the wife or the female partner says, well, I may have my needs, but he's busy, he's been involved in his addiction, he's not going to give me what I need, and I don't trust that I will get those needs met. So can she meet her own needs? And so asking this of our clients, to come to their own assistance and to begin to stand up for what they need and trust their instinct and go about getting their needs met in ways that are self-affirming and of worth is very important, very basic, and may never have been talked about before.
This must be especially gratifying for you to really help open up couples' eyes as to the dialogue that's necessary and even the structure. I mean, again, if you don't know that what you do is valued or valuable, you may not be able to identify what it's really worth financially.
It is very rewarding, Carol, to sit with a couple that have never been able to express to their other, significant other, how they feel about themselves, what they value in the relationship, and what may not have been valued about them. But to have those honest communications between them and to see the growth and connection is so rewarding for myself and us as therapists. And this is what my hope for Love and Money, to bring the two together in one avenue so that we're not just dealing with this piecemeal. We're not dealing with addiction and sex. but we're dealing with self-worth and value and currency and power. When we are not willing to stand up for ourselves and we give our power away to our other significant, that's problematic.
Well, absolutely, 100%. So now, could you explain the relationship between sexual and financial exploitation? I mean, you know and I know that sex can be used to control and manipulate or exploit. And what it is, it's considered sexual abuse. And you talk about eroticized rage.
That's correct. When sex and anger are fused together. Mm-hmm. When sex and anger are fused together, that is referred to when it's sexualized anger, eroticized anger. That means the anger becomes sexualized. Well, monetized rage is the fusing of finance or money and power and anger. And when you bring those together where finance and money are used in an exploitive, rageful fashion, allowing an example of that might be withholding information from a partner so that he or she is left more vulnerable financially, withholding information or withholding funds, making sure that decisions are made unilaterally. There's a checklist that I speak to in the book about monetized rage and how to identify if one, for example, is experiencing that. The questions in the book I have at the end of each chapter is for the partner and also for the individual, him or herself. So an example for the partner, am I afraid of my partner? I have to account for all my expenditures, and my partner gets angry when I have unexplained expenses. Am I afraid to ask for more money? If I am sexual, do I feel loved? And do I feel that this is a monetary exchange of sexual currency? Can I afford to leave my partner? And if I did, would I be threatened with financial impoverishment? Do I allow people to control me with money? And do I value my self-worth, or am I only as lovable as my possessions? So these are the ways in which monetized rage show up in covert ways that aren't, as I said before, earlier in our conversation. They're not always literal and accountable. They're intangible, but very, very important.
Well, and those questions are really thought-provoking because mm-hmm. it talks about people that may be afraid of what will happen if they do create some clear boundaries or expectations.
And stand up for themselves and their self-worth, yes.
Right, assert themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So now not only are you talking about money and sex, but you're talking about life skills like assertiveness or boundary setting. And so much of the work that you do helps couples to figure out what are healthy expectations, what are appropriate boundaries, when is it okay to assert oneself to get clarification, correct?
Yeah. Well, when I didn't perhaps properly identify the kind of work I do, I am a licensed therapist in Arizona, and I work with attachment, intimacy, addiction. I work with individuals and couples. And when I work with a couple, I'm often asked, whose side are you on? And I'm often asked that by either of the parties. And I say to them, I am on the side of health, that I will have a voice for the coupleship because you, husband, you, wife, you, significant other, you might have your bias, but my bias is for the health of the relationship. And so I give a voice to what needs to be addressed. And if that means helping one or the other find their voice for equality in the relationship where there is disparity, it's giving them skills. It's giving them tools to work with finding their self-worth, standing up for what they need and giving themselves a voice, which puts balance, healthy balance, and healthy power back in the relationship.
And so I would think that's quite the juggling act, because what you really have to convince both of the coupleship is that this is in their best interest, that they'll get healthier and they'll be happier as a result of this clarification and the boundary setting and giving each one of them a voice.
This can be quite a juggling act. But remember that ostensibly they're coming to therapy because they want a healthier, happier relationship. And if I can help either of the two parties see that it's not that they're giving something up and becoming powerless, or that they are giving more power to the other, it's that they are not using sex and money as a tool or a weapon to control, so that it becomes mutually shared and it's about the betterment of the relationship and not the bias of my self-worth being accentuated over your self-worth.
Absolutely. But, you know, if you have one person, one partner that's used to exploiting and is used to having the power, whether it be him or her, again, that juggling act of getting him or her to realize that they'll be happier if boundaries and expectations are clarified, that's tough because they're used to having that power.
Yeah, it is very tough. And in helping the individuals come to see why they needed to find this power in the first place helps to loosen the grip on controlling it.
Absolutely.
Much like addiction, we ask our clients to look at what was it in the first place that brought you to use sex, money, alcohol, drugs, gambling to either escape or heighten your feelings in the first place. And so it's when we explore and when I help clients understand what it was that they held on to it so firmly to begin with that they felt they needed to control, it loosens the grip on how profoundly they have to have it.
Totally makes sense. So this had to be a very exciting book to write, because obviously there isn't much available on sexual addiction and financial betrayal. And are there other books available besides yours in regards to love and money?
To my knowledge, there are very few books, if any, that meld these two together, not only bringing the insight and understanding to the concepts, but to deliver and offer exercises and tools for the coupleship to work on so that they can lend, perhaps for the first time, some balance in the relationship. I've often said about writing this book that had I come upon this book and I were not the author, I would have wished I was. I'm very excited about this book because it's something that my clients have benefited from already. And if one couple can benefit from it, then it was worth the effort. So I'm very excited about getting these concepts out there, getting this book as a resource out there. And I'm very excited for people like yourself, Carol, who have given me an opportunity to talk and to have your listeners learn more about this.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just getting ready to ask you who should read For Love and Money, because it doesn't sound like it's just for the addict. It sounds like any couple could benefit from this.
Any couple can benefit. You are correct. It isn't just for those who struggle with addiction, although for those who do, it will certainly be that more insightful. But for individuals who are working through relationships that involve money struggles, that involve currency, what I value versus what I thought I valued, what I wanted versus what I told you I want. So it's valuable reading for those in relationship, those who want to understand how to have a healthy relationship with money and sexual overlay. For the financier who's working and struggling with putting emotional currency to work and not just monetary currency. They can be emotionally impoverished and financially rich. So it is for the individual who is really struggling with finding balance in their life around these concepts.
You know, I got married rather late. For the very first time, I was 44, and my husband was 37, and we both came from different places in our financial background. And one of the things that we had read was that we really needed to go to a financial advisor to get some help on what to expect. And it was just very interesting. One of the things that the advisor said to both of us is that, you know, you're old enough as a couple, even though you've only been together a couple of years, that you're pretty set in your ways, and probably what would be the advantage to you is for each one of you to have your own separate account and then a household account. And that way you still have the freedom to spend what you need to, but you've contributed to the home. That was one of the most helpful things that this man said to us, as well as he tried to help us to understand that homes, cars, boats, whatever, were liabilities as opposed to assets. You know, you kind of feel good about the things you've accumulated,
sure,
not realizing that they cost you money, they take away from savings, and they can incur additional expenses. And so I would highly advise any of our listeners to really take a look at this book, For Love and Money. Obviously, they're listening to the show. They've downloaded it from iTunes or they've downloaded it from Blog Talk because they do have issues around sexual addiction. And, you know, it's kind of like I was just saying before you joined us on the call, a lot of sex addicts and their partners are sexually anorexic. You would think they'd have lots and lots and lots of sex, but in essence, they're anorexic. They don't have sex. And the same thing is true for love and money. I mean, clearly, you would think that a couple who has significant problems would have a great understanding about what the costs are financially in the relationship. But oftentimes, sex addiction is so emotional that you don't look at the practicalities of financial costs and where does the money go. It's almost like you're bombarded with such emotional issues that you can't get down to the realistic expectations and issues in a relationship.
Oh, absolutely. And as you know, Carol, certainly when a partner, spouse, partner, discovers for the first time the sexual infidelity, their world has been rocked. His or her world has now been turned upside down, perhaps overnight, and the world as they knew it, their relationship, their marriage as they knew it, is not the same. The last thing they're thinking about is money at that moment. They're not thinking about what was spent. They're not thinking about any of those other aspects. What they might be thinking is, am I lovable? Why wasn't I good enough? Why wasn't I the person that he or she turned to? What don't I have? Am I not enough? And so that sense of lack becomes the elephant in the room. And in the ways that a partner tries to make up for what they feel might have been the reasons for their partner's dalliances, exploitations, betrayals, I will, as a partner who may be in throes of betrayal, I may try to come to becoming my partner's most desired other. So I may try to up my sexual currency to become more attractive to him or her. But the fact of the matter is, it isn't, unfortunately, about the partner. That's the good news. The bad news is it's also not about the partner because addiction is so self-absorbing and at times incredibly exploitive. And that is the shame and the pain and the destruction of addiction.
Well, I 100% agree with you. And obviously you have shared why people should read your book and what kind of benefits that they can gain from it. Now, how can they obtain your book and how can they get a hold of you if they need to?
Well, they can find me on the web at www.DeborahKaplanCounseling.com, or they can simply Google Deborah Kaplan, and Deborah Kaplan Therapist pops up, and I'm proud to say there's enough information they'll be able to find me. For Love and Money, they can find on Amazon, and all they have to do is go to Books for Love and Money, and if they just put in that first part of the title with Deborah Kaplan, or they can put in For Love and Money, Exploring Sexual and Financial Betrayal in Relationships. They can contact me directly, and I will refer them. They can find the book link on my site. They can find it directly at Amazon. And it is readily available for download in an e-book form or paperback form.
Excellent. And then, Deborah, do you ever do workshops or intensives for people that you know, may not have the ability to see you specifically?
Yes, I do workshops and intensives. I do a fair amount of presenting around the country. I will be doing a presentation coming up in March in Arizona, both in Scottsdale, Phoenix area, as well as the Tucson area, and I'll be attending various conferences. And I do intensives. What I would recommend to the listener, for those that are interested, to contact me directly by way of my website, and or to go and watch, to look at the presentations. They can click on the links to presentations and see where that will be. It changes through the course of the year, and we're coming upon 2014, so it's the beginning of the year, and they'll be able to find different parts around the country where I will be presenting.
Well, I just really appreciate the fact that you've made this your mission to help people with a very uncomfortable topic, which obviously is money, and when it's combined with sex addiction, it can be absolutely devastating. As we begin to end the show for tonight, is there anything else that you would like to add that you don't think I've gotten to in asking you questions?
No, you were very complete. You were very thorough. I think more than anything, what I'd like to leave the listener with is that every situation will have its own issues, every relationship, every struggle. But what it really helps to do is to bring the issues onto the table and dig deep to look at what it is I need and I want in relationship and be willing to ask for that. And then to recognize that our own emotional needs and sexual needs cannot be stifled, that we have the right and we deserve to ask for what we need. We may not get it from our partner, but we deserve and need to ask for it because we have to value ourselves. And certainly,
absolutely. And I always say, when you assert yourself, it doesn't mean you get what you want, but at least you know you were clear and direct about what you needed, what you thought and believed. So, Deborah Kaplan, thank you so much. We are talking with Deborah L. Kaplan, who wrote For Love and Money, Exploring Sexual and Expectation in Relationships, and you can get her book at Amazon.com. Appreciate all your wisdom and wish you the best for the future.
Thank you, Carol, and thank you to the listener who's been with us tonight.
All right. Have a great week.
Take care, Carol.
All right. And I have to tell you, I mean, this is a tough subject, so I would highly recommend that you get her book and ask the tough exercises that will navigate you through this process. If you're not lucky enough to get to work with her or go to one of her intensives, again, I was talking with Deborah L. Kaplan for Love and Money, Exploring Sexual and Financial Exploitation in Relationships. So that does it for me tonight, and I appreciate you hanging in there and love that you download the show. If you have any questions for me, feel free to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com or go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach, or carolthecoach.com. As I end every show with my famous statement, there will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll see you next week. Make it a good one.